regulation leaves us with the dirtiest air in America, and low wages leaves us with Utahns who are struggling to get by.
Okay, thank you.
So we can do a lot more, and we can do it at the same time. We don't have to address these one at a time.
Okay, Mr. Cook.
Well, dirty air is a reality because the inversion is not going away. I would propose that we make it illegal to have an inversion and see how it works. But the inversion actually is just part of the geography of this area. It's here, and it's a reality, and the only thing that we can do to improve our air quality is to decide how much effluence we're willing to swim in when these inversions occur. And I think part of the solution to this, in addition to some tougher laws to help some of our major polluters, you look at the major polluters, and it's me, and it's you, and it's our neighbors. And a lot of the reason that we pollute is because we don't know what we're doing that is polluting. I think we can take an approach like the approach we took with the seatbelt law. It was necessary, I believe, to pass a law that said, if you're not buckled in, you're going to get a ticket. But the reason that seatbelts are effective, more effective today than they were years ago, is because we spend a lot of money and a lot of time educating people that if you want to be smart, you're going to buckle yourself in. And people, after a while, me included, will learn that if there's a smarter way to do something, I'm going to do it. I think a lot of our challenges in the state can be answered that way. And I think clean air will be improved as we continue to be aggressive, but as we continue to be aggressive in educating ourselves and educating people in the state as to the things they're doing that are diminishing the value of their lives because they continue to pollute the air we breathe.
Thank you. And we'll conclude with Governor Herbert.
I think all of us here understand the importance of clean air, clean water, and the importance of having a good environment that we live in. That goes without saying. But platitudes, political posturing is not going to get it done. I'm here to tell you, and I'm proud of the work we've done. I don't want to diminish the fact that we've got pollution problems. We do. But let's at least recognize the science, and let's recognize the reality out there. Mexico did have a problem. They had the refiners in their downtown. $20 billion that they got from the federal government is how they moved them. We've, in fact, passed laws for our own refineries, own industry here. They're spending hundreds of millions of dollars of their own money on best available technology, and they've reduced their pollution output. We're making headway. We are doing something. We're not sitting around twiddling our thumbs. We've had a reduction of 35% of our pollution along the Wasatch Front. Right now, today, we pollute less per capita than most any major city area in America today. But we do have to deal with an inversion. That's not an excuse. That's just the reality. Vaughn says it right. Let's do what we can. We can zone out inversions. That would have as much success as some of the platitudes we hear out there. But we're doing something, and we're doing it in a responsible way. It is important we have a healthy business environment. We can't have a healthy business environment unless we clean up the air. But part of it is our responsibility. It's a cultural change. We all have a role to play, all of us working together. And as we work together, we will, in fact, solve the problem. We are clearly on the right glide path. We're going to meet all the federal requirements for clean air, and we're going to do it in advance of the deadlines. So, again, we have a challenge. We recognize it. But we are doing something to address the challenge, and we're cleaning up the air.
Thank you, Governor. And I just want to thank you. Let's give them a round of applause for taking the opportunity to do that. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to ask those questions. And now we're going to hear from the audience some questions that they have. And we'll begin with you, Mr. Weinholz, to respond to these questions. Again, a minute and 30 seconds, if you could, please. Crime and education are both on the top 10 list. And one of the issues connected to K through 12 education is the growing school-to-prison pipeline, especially for our state's most underserved students. The question is, how can Utah focus more on addressing the needs of our increasingly diverse student population so that we are not investing more and more in corrections in the future? Mike?
So one of the things I've enjoyed most about campaigning and running for governor is learning that all of these things are connected. So children can't learn if they go to school sick or they have to stay home. So that's why Medicaid expansion is important. Also, parents who don't make a living wage and have to work two or three jobs just to make ends meet don't have the same opportunity to read to their children at night or take them to the museum. And so their children struggle as well. So, paying a fair wage, expanding Medicaid, investing more in education are all important, and they're all connected. The other thing that I realized is that, I lost my train of thought.
It happened to me too, Mike.
And I'm not even standing over
him. It's contagious.
We'll give you a couple more seconds if you'd like.
The other thing is, I've seen statistics recently that show that poor kids and minority kids graduate from high school at half the rate as the rest of our kids in the state. And that is just criminal. And you can begin to address this by doing all of those things that I said are all connected, and we need to do them all. We need to find the political will to do them all, because that's what's consistent with Utah values, taking care of our children, taking care of our less fortunate, and we have to find the political will to do it.
All right. Thank you. And Mr. Cook?
I was talking to a friend a couple of days ago about the disparity in education and this very topic. And he's been involved in some of the cultural outreaches that have occurred in the state. He said they went into some of the schools where there's a lot of immigrants, particularly Latino, and they learned that the Latino parents were intimidated to approach the principals and the teachers because the culture that they came from before they moved here, if they made an approach or made a criticism to the school administrator, their student would be ejected from the school. And so they were afraid to open their mouth and become involved in any way. And so he said the solution to that was we created cultural programs that involved the educators, because the educators didn't know that this was a problem, but involved those kinds of solutions. And he said what we found was the parents, the Latino parents and the immigrant parents, were happy to become involved in their students' education, in their children's education. They just didn't know that it was the part of our culture. So a lot of the problems that we have in students not graduating and in the social issues that are the result of lack of education, some of those are easy to solve. Some of them are complicated. As Mike mentioned, they're all integrated, and I think that's the challenge. If you were looking to solve the problem strictly by changing the education system, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I think we have to give our teachers the respect that we give our veterans. I think they're the people who have the boots on the ground, and they're the ones who are able to assess the situations and the circumstances that are keeping us from growing and educating our children as best we can.
Thank you. And Governor Herbert, your thoughts about the school-to-prison issue?
Well, clearly our concern about the rising generation and making sure that they are trained properly is an important role of education. But it is many levels that we are combined together. And I can tell you that I'm proud of the First Lady, my wife, Jeanette. Her initiative is on parenting. We need not forget the most important aspect of rearing our children correctly is what happens in the walls of our own home. I'm proud of the fact that Utah has the largest percentage of two-parent households in America today. That leads to much better outcomes. We're spending less money and getting better outcomes because of that family basis that we have here in Utah that we in fact appreciate and reward. We have money that's going into early intervention with some of our at-risk children to help them, optional all-day kindergarten and other programs that are available to the local school districts as they choose to spend the money. Our minority scores are up now in a greater degree than ever before, so we're making some headway. We're not to where we want to be, but we're certainly, again, trending in the right direction. We have a simple philosophy that we tell our young people here, and that is that if you want to stay out of poverty, Again, we have a low crime rate here in Utah, about half the national average, because we have good people, good parenting, good principles and policies. We say this: one, get a good education. Post high school, go to something beyond high school. Two, get a job. Three, get married. And four, have children, in that order. That will ensure you 95% of the time you will not be impoverished in this country.
Thank you, Governor. And Mr. Johnson.
So I agree that one of the great things about running for governor is traveling around the state and seeing different, meeting different people and seeing different schools and seeing how they are dealing with this problem. I believe in the adage, well begun is half done. We need to do a better job in first, second, and third grade teaching reading. Study after study has shown that when kids read at grade level by the third grade, their chance of success is significant. But when they don't, then they wind up with what we're talking about in this question. We need more emphasis on early reading skills. Second, the counselor to student ratio in our high schools today is about 380 students for every counselor. We have a goal of 350, but best practice around the country is 250. 380 to 1 means an average student spends about 30 minutes a year with their counselor. That's not helping them do anything more than saying you need one more PE class to graduate. We need counselors who can help them do the right things. Lastly, we need to take advantage of what we're learning in charter schools and how they are helping at-risk kids. One of the great examples is up in Davis County Career Path High School. Its student body is full of at-risk kids, and it's using alternative teaching methods so that those kids are graduating at great rates. They're finishing 2 and 3 years at a time. Now, not every at-risk child can go to Career Path High School, but what we're learning there ought to be seeping into our schools throughout the state.
Thank you. Wouldn't the younger generation be so impressed with how we're using social media today? It's great to be able to have you participate in our questions. We do have another question from our audience member. Do you support or oppose efforts to change Utah's caucus and election system to give more power to voters instead of party delegates? An example, the Count My Vote compromise from 2 years ago. And where do we go from here? And I believe we're starting with Mr. Cook.
Yes.
All righty then. Didn't even have time to push the timer on that one.
Yeah, no, I won't stop there. I'm almost a politician. When I entered the race, I decided to collect signatures as well as try to woo delegates. And so I have a little bit of experience with both, and we'll see how it goes. In order to become a candidate to guarantee a position on a primary ballot in this state, for a statewide race, you have to collect 28,000 signatures. Governor Herbert has done that. He's gone down that path. I think Mike Lee's done it as well. It's a formidable task. 28,000 names is a lot of names. I've learned that. And there's ways to do it. You can hire somebody to do it if you want to pay them $150,000 to $180,000. Or you can organize an army and away you go. So I didn't want to spend that kind of money, so I'm organizing an army and away we went. I think it's a definite step in the right direction. I think based on my own experience, 28,000 signatures is a little bit extreme. I know there's a lawsuit going on. Judge Nuffer is going to decide here in a few days kind of the outcome of that thing. But it's definitely a step in the right direction. I think one of the problems that we have, can I have an extra minute and a half?
You have literally 10 seconds.
The caucus system in the state has really led us to an extreme imbalance in the political parties. And I think that perpetuating the caucus system as it has been in the past is a disservice to the voters of the state. I'm totally in favor of the signature collecting route that's being pursued and offered as an option. I think we need to continue to make additional improvements.
Thank you. And again, we're sorry we have to limit the amount of time. We hope that these are topics that you will continue to have conversations in your own communities, but we will have to limit that time, and we'll turn the time over to Governor Herbert to answer this question.
Well, I support the caucus convention system. I think it works very well when everybody shows up and participates. I expect this turnout this last time will have good representation of our neighborhoods. It's a representative form of government, and our caucus convention system has served us well. I think the outcomes we've received in Utah are because of that. So, by their fruits ye shall know them. That being said, when the Count My Vote thing came about, there was certainly a groundswell of support for this alternative way of just going to a general primary. And this goes under the adage of no good turn goes unpunished, because in an attempt by the legislature to work with the Count My Vote people to find a compromise that would work for both sides, the proverbial win-win, Senate Bill 54 was born. And they were trying to protect in some form or fashion the caucus convention system, because that's what they thought was the important way to approach elections. To have our legislators and others be beat up because of that by Republicans is unfortunate. I've in fact said in hindsight, I wished I'd vetoed the bill and just let it be voted on by the people, and whatever the people say, we will respond with. The Attorney General has told us, in light of the lawsuits and litigation and things that are going on out there, the only way you can be sure that you're going to be on the ballot for a primary election is to take both avenues, both approaches. And so prudence is part of being a common sense Republican, and so that's why I've taken both approaches. But I do plan to go to the caucus, go to the convention and state my case. I have a great track record, I believe, and put it in the hands of the delegates, and fully expect to do well at the convention.
And Mr. Johnson?
I'm putting principle over prudence. I believe that the goal of the Count My Vote group and SB 54 was noble: more participation by more Utahns. The means by which it was done was not a good means. And to call it prudent, I think, is a mistake. As I've traveled the state from Hurricane to Helper to Hooper to Hiram and many other H towns in between, I've been asked a lot of hard questions and learned a lot about the state. When a ballot position is for sale by collecting signatures, rural Utah will lose its voice. That's why SB 54 and the Count My Vote solution is not good. If I'm the governor, I'll work with the Republican Party, and I would hope that the Democrats would do the same, so that we keep the caucus convention system, but we raise the threshold to get to a primary from the low 60% that it is today to something higher, so that rural Utah still has a voice, but more people participate because there are primaries more frequently.
And finally, Mr. Reinholz, if you'd like to comment.
Well, I think the Count My Vote initiative was well-intended. Anytime that you want to involve more voters, more people, and get more candidates, that's best for the process. And what motivated this initiative was the fact that, again, fewer and fewer people in the caucus system are controlling who gets to run for office. And that's restrictive. You know, more is always better in a democracy. And that's why respected, experienced Republicans like former Governors Leavitt, Huntsman, Mitt Romney, Scott Anderson, all were driving Count My Vote, because they had the wisdom to know that the more you involve the people of the state, the better outcomes you're going to have. And the caucus system can tend to repress that. So, fewer and fewer people are deciding who gets to be your representative in the legislature, and that's not right.
Thank you, gentlemen. We do have what I believe will be our final question this afternoon, and this again coming from a member of our audience. Do you support removing tax subsidies from water districts to make people pay the real cost of the water they use? If not, how do you propose to reduce consumption during a time of both drought and growth? And Governor Herbert.
I do believe we have to adjust to the true cost of water. It's not an issue that's been really at the top of mind for most people in Utah, but it's an issue that I'm very concerned about. The only limiting factor we have for the growth that we have in Utah is we are being discovered for economic opportunity and quality of life as the fifth fastest growing state in America today is water. That's the only limiting factor. We did a Your Utah, Your Future initiative, the largest initiative in the history of our country here in Utah, nearly 60,000 participants, asking questions like we've had here today about where would you like the state to go, and being responsive to the concerns of our population. Water is an issue of grave concern. We have a need to conserve what we have, but also to develop what we're going to need into the future, whether that be the Bear River Basin, whether that be the Lake Powell Pipeline and others in between. We've got to plan for that. But we need to understand the true cost. We've set aside about $6 million in this year's budget to do a complete analysis of the state to see what we need to be doing, in fact, to adjust to help conservation efforts, but also set aside money to, in fact, develop resources that we have capable of doing. Again, with a fast-growing state like us, water has got to be a top-of-mind issue today.
So to answer the question succinctly, yes. As our population grows, and it's expected to double over the next few decades, our snowpack will not double. And so we need to do a better job of two things: storing our water and conserving our water. We will better conserve it when we are paying the true cost of water. Today, when it's subsidized, we use more of it than we otherwise would if we were paying the true cost. The second most arid state in the country, we have some of the cheapest water. When you pay less than something actually costs, you buy more and you use more. We need to stop doing that. We also need to build up our infrastructure. How do we fund that? Part of it is, today, Utah sends more water downriver out of the Colorado to Arizona, Nevada, and California than we're contractually obligated to under long-term treaties. When Nevada sends more water downriver, they lease it. They monetize it. We're not doing that. We should. That will help us pay for the structure to capture our water. So between capturing water and conserving through proper pricing, I think we can get a long way to solving this problem.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I agree with Jonathan. We have to get the right pricing for our water, and tax subsidies falsely keep those prices down. One of the ways that we can do that is go to metering so that people are actually paying a fair price for the water that they use. And I believe that that will influence conservation, because once people have to start paying the true cost of water, they'll be more motivated to conserve. With regard to the Lake Powell Pipeline, I spent last week in Washington County, and I couldn't find one Democrat, Republican, or Independent who was in favor of the Lake Powell Pipeline. First of all, they believe that they don't need it, but the main objection to it is fiscal responsibility. This is going to cost over $4 billion if we're honest about what the pipeline will cost. I think we've underestimated the true cost of it and maintenance. And whenever there's an issue like this, as governor, I am always going to turn to the people, because the people need to be involved in self-governance. And when I was in Washington County last week, couldn't find one person in favor of the Lake Powell Pipeline. So we need to listen to the people. We need to be realistic about these issues. And we have to start doing that right away, because water is a serious issue.
All right. And Mr. Cook?
I think it's a good idea to charge for use. It's like the tax we put on automobile fuel It's a tax that if I want to travel more, I pay more tax, and if I don't want to pay the tax, I can choose not to travel. A lot of our water is used for agriculture. I think that most of it is, actually. I think a lot of it is used to water lawns. Regulating agriculture may be more difficult, but I think that we can encourage people to do xeriscaping and other conservation efforts to cut down on the amount of water we use on lawns. I think that when we make decisions about the amount of water that flows into the Great Salt Lake, as an example, we need to take a multi-generational view. We need to look down the road 150 years from now and say, is this decision sustainable? It may be sustainable in the near future, but will my great-great-great-grandchildren be healthy because of this decision? And I get concerned when I hear about ideas that to me seem like they're short-term solutions but long-term disasters. So I hope, and as governor, we'll take that long-term view when we make decisions as important as water.
Thank you. And that will conclude our question and answer segment of the Utah Foundation Priority Project. And again, we want to thank each of the candidates for taking the opportunity to make this a priority to be with us here today. I think we all found the information helpful and some answers given, but maybe more questions than answers today. Thank you so much.
And just really quickly, let me again thank the candidates.